On today's show, we take a look at Vine and ask why users haven't warmed to it after 2 months in. We take a glance at the many changes Facebook has made to the platform in the last month, and later on we'll be talking to Brian Daly of Pitchify about the startup scene in Ireland.
And you're very welcome to the Simply Zesty podcast. We're joined here today by our creative director, Aaron Goodliffe. Hello, Aaron.
Hi, Gordon. How are you?
And our lead designer, Sarah Kavanagh. Hi, Sarah.
Hi.
And we'll start off with our first topic, which is Vine. Now, a lot of hype was generated around it when Twitter announced it back in January. But fast forward 2-3 months later, and the uptake on it hasn't been particularly great. A study from RJ Metrics there recently showed that the most active users on Twitter only 4% share video during Vine's first month, whereas in that same period, that same group shared 98% of that group shared a photo within that period as well. Aaron, if we can just start off with you, where has it all gone wrong?
I don't know. I think it's just too difficult to kind of get into Vine. I mean, while you were talking there, I just sent an Instagram. But yeah, it's just with Vine, you have to think of something to do. You have to think of something interesting to come up with. Like, even just there sitting there, I mean, my first Vine was me writing Vine sucks there and just recording it just so I could kind of get to grips. But you know, I've been looking around all the feeds and I've been kind of paying attention to what people are doing, and it just seems when people are bored at parties or at events, they take a look at their apps and they're like, you know what, I haven't used Vine yet, let me just have a look at something through my Vine.
Is it a case that's far too much effort to put together, or it requires too much brain power maybe?
Essentially, like, Instagram is easy. You can look at something, take a picture of it, stick a filter on, whack a lot of hashtags on and feel great about yourself with all your likes coming up. But with Vine, you know, I saw the Witch one, which was really good. I saw that Wolverine trailer, which worked really well. And I think it's very specialized. Like, I love GIFs, and I think maybe that's, you know, the progression, that maybe people are taking images and then you can kind of piece them together and that will work a little bit easier, I guess.
Yeah, so is it more a format that's it's tailored to, you mentioned the Wolverine trailer, which was brilliant. I don't know if you saw it, Sarah. It was brilliantly put together. I doubt they shot on the phone. I imagine they uploaded it somehow. But is it Vine really just a case that it's designed purely for creative types, or, you know, or brands that are very creative, and normal, you know, the average user won't have any use for it because it requires them to come up with something very creative just to get noticed?
Yeah, I mean, it seems like it's on too mainstream a platform at the moment. I mean, the only real use for these kind of animated kind of imagery kind of video things are GIFs. I mean, if you really want to get people on it, it has to be full of like really kind of funny GIFs, cool trailers like that. I just don't think the average user is going to be able to come up with something that's actually that engaging and people are actually going to watch. I was looking through my feeds, I'm like, this isn't even that interesting. And also the load times are terrible. So I'm there looking through, you know, waiting 5 seconds for each one to load. I'm like, I can't believe I waited 5 seconds to, you know, see this catwalk across the screen. Like, this is what I'm looking at here. So, and that's pretty much it. So, I think there's definitely a future in sense of it's a very niche kind of audience, I think. But it needs to go down the GIF route. And as you're saying, like, the movie trailers, doing specialized things like that. But I think it's just Twitter's answer to, you know, they have to get rid of Instagram. They have to have a new kind of fad to kind of fill the void. And unfortunately, it's not going to fill the boots of Instagram, so.
Question to either of you, what could Vine improve upon to fill that gap? Is there even an answer or a solution to it? Or is there any way you can improve upon it?
I do pictures that you can piece together, maybe like stop motion. At the moment, it doesn't allow that. It's like you have to have it on the same, you have to hold it down and you can't close the app and then come back in a later time. Like, to a certain extent.
Or for drafts, basically.
Yeah, so like drafts and being able to take multiple photos. I do a stop motion like video more so than having to, you know, do my video all over and, you know, and keep waiting till like the next thing happened, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, there's a lot it can improve upon. Mm. Like, you can't import video at the moment. Something that other similar apps in the past have allowed you to do, like select a segment of video and shorten it down, and then like the Cinemagraph app that was out a while back. Load times again, they're really, really bad.
They're very bad. Like, it's debilitating for the app. I mean, and, you know, on 3G, obviously, it depends on what network you're on. It's quite quick to a certain extent, but sometimes if you're not in a great connection zone, I mean, even Instagram will kind of get you a few images to keep going, and at least Instagram has the kind of, oh, everything's there and then, but with this, you have to wait just to watch. You don't know, even know what you're watching, so it's kind of, even the thumbnails, because the quality isn't as good, and, you know, it's never going to be made as good because it doesn't have filters, it doesn't have kind of effects or anything like that. you know, you're not gonna, I just don't really want to stroll through my stream. Like,
so is it a case that Vine is just a very raw app in the sense that it's, you know, what you see is very much what you get, and possibly even less.
Yeah, it's a bit complex. I think it's really made for people to just put their Vines on Twitter, because even the interface is quite tricky to see, you know, everything that people have put up, and it just seems like it's a kind of a rush move by Instagram just to have something, or sorry, by Twitter to replace Instagram as, you know, something to have on their site.
Is it like it got a lot of attention back there in January when it was first launched, and everyone was talking about it and gushing about the potential it had. And now that's kind of, you know, that's pretty much evaporated by, you know, come the end of March. Do you think getting rid of the hype behind the app is a good thing, because it will allow the kind of more creative users or the creative types to actually start coming up with more creative vines instead of just posting a vine for the sake of posting one?
I think you just have to come up with a very specialized idea. I mean, and to be honest, it would almost be easier for me to come up with a GIF concept and be able to like manipulate something on my computer and then make a GIF out of it, as opposed to being limited by what I can do on my phone. I mean, if you're given creative people who are kind of working in a space where they'd be coming up with stuff and they'd be like, oh, I'm going to take this photo and manipulate it and maybe do some kind of funny GIF, then it's easier to do on my computer than it is on my phone. So that's why I think it's always going to be limited. I don't really see a big future for Vine, to be honest. Instagram, I fobbed off and I was like, oh, it's just Instagram, but I still use it all the time. Like, it's just because, you know, it's become part of my little phone repertoire, but I don't see Vine ever being there.
Yeah, unless you're crazy into stop motion and animation, yeah. I don't think it's ever really going to, you know, be one of your favorite apps. Like, there are some really creative guys on there doing stop motion animation, and they're incredible, and I have no idea how they're actually doing it. It's obvious that they're using tripods and they're stopping and starting and stopping and starting, and it must take them hours. There's one guy called Koa who uses, he does papercraft, but he does stop motion just using paper, and it's incredible the stuff that he does, but it must take him hours to set up a 6-second video. And at the end of the day, that's what it is. It's 6 seconds for you to actually get a communication across, and that's probably why brands are trying to embrace it now, because it is a short, sharp, quick communication with people that doesn't take up too much of their time. It's not going to bore them, but it's just the potential of how much they can actually communicate in that 6 seconds, I think, is going to be their a brand's barrier to using the app, and whether actually there's going to be an audience for it in the first place.
Yeah, that's why I think, to be honest, I think, you know, the hype may have died down to a certain extent, to the point where, like, now brands are hopping on, but I think it might even be too late. I don't really think there's going to be, if I had to bet, in 6 months' time, I think that it will have died down a lot more, and, like, you know, these early, you know, these people that have kind of created this content for these brands that, you know, putting trailers up on it, it'll just turn into one of these, you know, empty kind of social networks that no one really uses that much.
Could you ever see Twitter incorporating into their actual app, similar to, you can take a photo directly from Twitter app, and since it's very much entwined in it?
No.
No, it's just...
Fair enough.
I mean, to be honest, a big push might be, you could even see them doing, like, even copying Instagram and just having like a multi-platform thing within the app, so you can take a photo or you can take a video, and it just means that whatever your Vine is, you know, it could be even just, you know, a couple of stills, maybe it doesn't have to be 6 seconds. Maybe creating kind of a multi-purpose app which does images and video, which wouldn't then encroach on Instagram as much. But yeah, I'm just trying to fight for a losing cause here. Yeah,
they need to improve it a lot before they'd even consider integrating it into their app. Okay. Definitely.
So in short, Vine probably won't even make the first page of your app list on iPhone.
No.
Yeah, it's on my third page in a folder. So
it's unlike Twitter to push something so much and allow it to fail.
Yeah.
So, you know, we could be very much surprised and see something kick-ass coming out over the next couple of months, but for the offering so far, it's not blowing me away.
Well, we'll live in hope then, if that's the case.
we'll hope for Vine. Pray for Vine.
And moving on, the next big news, well, a lot of little news pieces, is the numerous changes that Facebook has made to the site over the last week or two, actually. Now, there's far too many of them to cover properly on the podcast, but we'll focus on one or two of the main ones, starting off with the cover photo guidelines being loosened out. Sarah, can I ask you, is this a case of Facebook being more liberal with the rules, or, you know, for the new redesign, or have they just gone tired of trying to enforce their old rules?
I don't think it's a case that they're tired of implementing their own rules, but I think they've probably come under a lot of pressure from brands. Now, this is purely speculation, but if I was a big brand on Facebook and I was spending hundreds of thousands on advertising a year, and I was restricted to what I could actually put in my cover photo, I'd be pretty disgusted. And, you know, if I've set up a Facebook page to plug my Facebook app or my iPhone app, and it's, you know, hundreds of thousands of downloads, but Facebook is telling me that I can't say download my app in the cover photo, you're seriously restricting brands as to what they can say. And even 20% isn't a lot, but it's enough if you're communicating correctly. So I think probably it's likely that they've just come under a lot of pressure and they're saying, you know what, yeah, we've been a bit too strict about what people can and can't do. It is their space. You know, it's their... kind of, it's their intellectual property at the end of the day. It's their space to use, so...
And also it ties in with the newsfeed changes where the cover photos are now displayed in it as opposed to just a sponsored story. So that obviously played a part in the rule change.
Yeah, especially with the hoverovers on the photos and then it coming up. I think it's kind of key that, you know, if you're hovering, even a hoverover, it's nice to show maybe, you know, what their latest offer is or what they're, you know, what they're pushing, because, you know, it's the driving force of getting people to pages. You know, it's difficult to get you to the page, so it'd be nice to have the cover photo there to at least promote it in some way.
Yeah.
All right, sorry, I'm too far from the mic.
I'll have to edit that one little part out. But also another thing is, we're speaking of advertising there as well, the inclusion of, well, the possibility that they're working on hashtags as well. Is that another advertising...
I think so. Yeah, I think it's a huge push for them to try and sell more ads. Look at the potential of using a hashtag. You know, you have the possibility of selling featured hashtags for brands, user-generated content pages based on hashtags. Similar to the Twitter pages that were set up for NASCAR, where it pulls in content based on what people are actually tweeting about using specific hashtags. That could be also integrated into Facebook and set up kind of on-the-fly community pages for big events that are happening, world events, Olympic Games, football tournaments, whatever is going on. I think the hashtag it's now become commonplace, like the at symbol. It's, you know, it's part of online communication and conversation now. And well, for me anyway, it's becoming part of...
As long as you don't say it in hashtags.
Yeah, anymore, hashtag so lol.
That might be a bit of a problem.
Yeah, that's the problem though, isn't it? When it comes over to Facebook, it's kind of... I think it's just the fact that some people are actually doing it now on Facebook, just obliviously adding hashtags, and then people are getting annoyed by it. It's like, please stop putting hashtags on Facebook. And now all those idiot streams are coming true with the hashtag being brought over to Facebook. It's kind of... I don't know.
It's a bit like that clip that our designer Philip Joyce circled around on Facebook yesterday of, I think it was Awesomeness TV or something like that, where they were saying, I can't remember the hashtags because I've blocked them from my mind, but it was pretty vapid anyway. Could you imagine a Facebook feature where that's the case?
Or I mean,
think people will be a little bit smarter about it?
No, I don't think they'll be smarter about it. I think it's just, it's a complete advertising sales tool, and it, you know, and people, they've recognized how people are just doing it regardless of whether hashtags even mean anything on Facebook. So they're like, well, you know what, let's just kind of let's get on this and get hashtags on Facebook. And I will not be hashtagging on Facebook.
It'd be a serious easy sell for them, though.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Like, especially around big events that are coming up for brands, you know, not for personal use, but for brands, definitely going to be a massive...
Absolutely.
And finally, the last...
That's if they do it.
Yeah.
Okay. I got a bit too sold into the idea.
Definitely don't know this.
The final thing is... Facebook officially introduced threaded comments after testing it for quite a bit since November. So is this a good bad development?
Yes, Well,
which one?
a bit of both, right? Because I think it has multiple benefits across pages and across profiles. For pages, yeah, brilliant. For you know, customer service, for personalization of communications from brands to their users. You go onto a Facebook page, you ask a brand a question, and they reply along with 20 other people who've asked a question before you. So are they replying to you? Are they replying to Mary or John or Patrick above you? So for brands, it's going to be great. They can actually personalize and tailor their responses to users asking them questions. I can see more benefits from a personal level.
Okay.
And this is kind of...
Go on.
Again, it's going under the same premise, but if you look at the news stories lately of the whole cyberbullying thing and comments getting out of control on... comments getting out of control on pictures and videos that people are posting up. If you have these threaded comments and replies to specific posts, you can actually track and trace how a conversation started and how this cyberbullying began by tracing it back through different replies. So it could actually prevent people from putting harassing comments on pages or on pictures. I don't know, but it's... it's something that I'd like to see on profiles as well as pages.
So just a bit of an unintended benefit, a good one. But
yeah, I don't think that's the reason why they ever do it, because they're not really rolling it out yet onto profiles, but it could be a good one down the line. I haven't really thought about it much, but...
It just shows how savvy Facebook users are, though, that, you know, it's just become kind of... It's just a normal occurrence now that this is the kind of interface that people are used to, and it's just how, you know, you're so expecting with, you know, how basic Facebook was in terms of, you know, you wouldn't even comment on the, you know, you'd just be able to comment back and forth, and then there was comments on comments, and now this threaded, and it's just turning into, like, everyone's so tech savvy these days. I remember back in the days of, you know, Reddit and everything like that, and you're just like, you would never expect everyone to kind of pick up on that, and that just to be the regular way people kind of interact with each other. But it's the crazy, scary world we live in. Unfortunately,
it's moving at a very rapid pace.
Yeah. Insightful.
Well, we'll leave it on that. Insightful comments.
Tumbleweed.
Aaron, sir, thanks a million for talking.
Thank you, Quentin, for having us.
Now, over the last few years, the Irish startup scene has come in leaps and bounds, and as a result, many events have been set up to cater for this growing community. One such event is Pitchify. Originally set up in June 2012 to help bridge the gap between university students and entrepreneurs, it has expanded rapidly and has over 700 people attending its last event. Brian Daly is the co-founder of Pitchify, and I started off by asking him what separates it from other events.
I guess we tried to be the cultural event in Ireland here, so bringing the community together is probably our main emphasis.
Like, how long does it take to arrange from coming up with the idea and setting the date to picking the startups and getting the event organised, getting your speakers and so on till the night? Does it take a good month, 2 months? Or
There's a lot of work behind it, and there's a lot of errors that goes into it. But, you know, the startups are readily available. They're constantly looking to pitch and get out there and get their ideas out there. So they're the easy part almost.
Right.
Getting a speaker, I guess, is a difficult thing. So, you know, one speaker can say they'll come speak to an event, because, you know, Pitchify is not a globally known kind of event. It's up and coming. So getting a speaker to commit can be a hassle, but, you know, generally they've all been fantastic, and if someone can't make it, they'll get a replacement, so they've been good to us.
So the event has been received quite favourably as well from what I've been hearing, and also from the quality of speakers you guys have been getting as well. It seems very warmly received. Has that been the case, or...?
Yeah, the support that we've gotten from the community has been fantastic. Starting out 6-7 months ago, we actually had Niall Harbison in. He helped us kind of launch it, because going back to the actual where Pitchify came from was when I entered into a competition that Niall's running, the hashtag 20,000 Yo-Yos comp. And I didn't win it, but I got shortlisted. So I launched Pitchify with the help of Darren Mulvihill. Launched Pitchify out of that event entry and brought everyone together who was in the kind of startup scene and people who entered competition. And from there, it's kind of grown. from 35-40 people to just under 700 people at the last event. So it's been great, the support we've gotten from the community.
Yeah, and that growth and momentum is definitely the first thing you would notice about the event. It's still, as you're saying, it's very young, it's just starting up, and because of that you have a lot of startups wanting to pitch at it and get 5 minutes to present their startup to a wider audience. When you're deciding which startups appear at a Pitchify event, what criteria do you guys go for when deciding who gets to go on stage on a particular night?
So we generally like to give it a good mix of different types of startups in different areas. So ones that are exciting, you know, most of them are in academies like Wyra or the NDRC through Launchpad. That's where we kind of they catch our attention almost. But you know, when we get emails from startups looking to pitch and you look into them. Generally, that they're an established startup. They have a standard. They're being recognised for what they're doing, and Pitchify just gives them that extra chance to get in front of investors and to get in front of their fellow community.
There is definitely a hunger for these kind of events. Like you mentioned there about being a cultural event, you know, in terms of kind of bridging the gap between, you know, the regular people and people, entrepreneurs and students, mm-hmm. and anyone kind of interested in marketing and technology to begin with. How, like, it's probably Pitchify is probably the first event, or at least I kind of noticed, that's trying to bridge all these communities, if you will, together. I guess Pitchify is the first step towards that, but how do you, what further steps do you need to take to lessen the gap between, say, those startups or those people who have great ideas? It might be young people coming out of university with entrepreneurs who have years of experience but are looking for the next big thing.
Well, I guess to start off, I'll just make the point that the Irish tech community compared to the tech community that I experienced in London and from what I've heard in America, we're a lot closer because of the size of the country and the size of the tech community. Chances are you're going to know pretty much nearly everyone in it from going to different networking events and kind of doing your own networking over Twitter or whatever. So, you know, the word spreads between them, and I guess our original mission was to bridge the gap between students and the entrepreneurial way of life. Like, I'm a student myself. I've got a month left in college until I have to sit my finals. So I understand that there's not enough being done in colleges to push entrepreneurialism and show students the resources that are available. So that was our original mission. Coming up to the events and seeing the events in firsthand, more and more investors were arriving at events talking to startups, which was a great sign, and we're getting great feedback from that. So that naturally kind of takes the place of being one of the main features of Pitchify. It's been amazing so far. I mean, lots of really cool people and kind of introducing the scene to people who weren't familiar with it before has been great.
And you're saying that the culture in Ireland is very, very close. What separates Irish startups from, say, from those different communities?
Well, I guess it's the population. You know, there's so much more people in London. There's so much more people in the different parts of America that, you know, we're a much smaller community, which gives us the chance to meet and get to know other startups and other entrepreneurs on a personal basis, which is a great thing. You know, if you need help with something, you know, you're going to know someone that's going to be able to help you out and is going to want to help you out. And it's a great feeling. And I would put it down to population. And I guess it's our culture. Being Irish, we have the crack, you know. And we go out and we're kind of naturally open to meeting new people and stuff like that. We're not that other cultures are kind of
orange, but we tend to emphasise that a lot more.
We do,
know?
Yeah.
We have meetups and you know, go to pubs for drinks and stuff like that. That kind of culture is ingrained into us. Going into the idea of culture, like whenever you're talking about kind of startups itself, the quintessential area is Silicon Valley. No matter if you're talking about culture and startups, that's always going to come up no matter what. And I kind of noticed over the last couple of months or so, different countries are trying to create their own version. Do you think the Irish startup culture needs to possibly emulate what's in Silicon Valley, or do we have enough defining characteristics ourselves, i.e. our networking, our, you know, our ability to have a crack, we all know each other, is it better that we focus on those unique qualities instead and create our own identity?
We're doing great things in terms of the startup scene, bringing people together and, you know, generally networking really well and getting stuff done. Saying that, Ireland is most definitely a test market. And as I was saying, going to the London Web Summit, it was a huge eye opener in terms of the money that's readily available in London. And talking to people who are at South by Southwest, saying that startups of, you know, the same caliber of their own have reached funding of up to $1 million, and you know that money is just not available here in Ireland through you know the Irish Enterprise Board or Enterprise Ireland or, you know, the IDA and stuff like that. They're not focusing on putting money into the tech scene in Ireland. But we're a test market. We don't have the population, like the critical mass to really push a product out. Does that
hinder us in the long run, especially when we're, say, pitching in like the London Web Summit or any international events?
But when you see companies like Facebook and Yahoo announcing, you know, hundreds of new jobs, I don't imagine that the majority of those jobs are going to go to Irish people. They're looking for people with native tongues in Arabic and in Russian and who can communicate with the rest of the world based in Ireland.
Right, and just to finish up, what's next on the horizon for our Pitchify?
So our next event is hopefully going to be at the end of May, start of June. I've got my final exams coming up pretty soon, so I don't really want to hinder them too much. But yeah, it should be fun. We'll have Microsoft in, the BizSpark lads will be in, doing a bit of a talk. We'll have six startups pitching, lots of networking, and yeah, hopefully it'll be a great night.
And that was me talking to Brian Daly of Pitchify. Well, that's all we have time for today. My thanks to Aaron, Sarah, Brian, Claire for producing, and to you for listening. Until next time, take care.